This is RSBNB Update, episode 579, recorded Friday, August 5th, 2016. Armchair Game Designers. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. Sirion and I here this week. Hello.
Hi.
So, you enjoying yourself as entering your second week of this podcast co-hosting gig?
Yeah, I am. Like, 2 weeks in a row is very...
It's shocking at first, right?
It's shocking, yeah. I think I've done it once before, but yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, well, you'll get used to it, and I know you have some interesting thoughts coming up ahead on some of the updates that were unveiled this week, but we'll save that for...
Oh, this is a very juicy week for me.
Yeah, we'll save that for later. So this week is patch week, the first week of August. Nice to give us all a bit of a breather after the arc, and the patches were needed, I do have to say that, so we'll get to those in just a moment. But first, some interesting announcements coming from JX this month on the realm of membership and Treasure Hunter. So, interestingly enough, all members this month will get an additional key on Treasure Hunter. So you get 3 instead of 2, or 4 instead of 3 if you're a Premier Club member. So this is very interesting because JX has never done this before in the middle of the year. It's so weird that it makes us ask why, and almost as if there's some ulterior motive here, because, I mean, it hasn't necessarily been announced that there's going to be any interesting things coming up on Treasure Hunter this month. So, you have any theories on why they would do this?
No, not at all. I was, like, at first I was like, well, that's nice. I don't mind my extra daily key. But then I realized there's no way this can be beneficial for Jagex unless there's something I'm missing. The only thing I could come up with was try and get people to realize how nice 3 keys a day is and make them like hyped up for the next Premier Club where they get that.
Yeah, we are 3 months away from that being unveiled in November, so...
I suppose possible. So, but August seems to be like a weird month for that. Maybe Jagex has the feeling it has to make up for something. Maybe the beach still not being out or something. I don't know. It strikes me as really peculiar.
Yeah, because, I mean, sure, you, from a marketing standpoint, you get people on the bandwagon of having 3 keys per month or 4 keys per month if you're a Premier Club member, and you're ultimately going to want more of these keys. So that means that I can see there's going to be some people out there who are interested in, you know, just the extra key and maybe the benefits that keys give, whether it's, you know, a little bit of bonus XP here and there, or maybe the odd promotion that comes out. That could be ultimately what JX is going after here, is just to stoke Treasure Hunter key sales. I don't think they need to do, given how much some people purchase, but that's just my opinion.
I mean, alternatively, they're just looking at what happens if players all of a sudden get an extra key. What influence is that going to have on prices of, say, Silverhawk feathers? Or are people more likely to buy keys if they already have more to start with? So maybe this is just Jagex, because I have the feeling keys are not a very major source of income for Jagex. I think the membership fees and especially Solomon's Store are the biggest chunks of income. I think keys are not that big.
Yeah.
Compared.
Like,
so maybe Jagex is just experimenting and seeing if they can get more out of it.
Yeah. See, I could see it totally going that way, because if you run around RS, the thing you see the most are the Solomon overrides.
Mm-hmm.
And I can imagine key sales spiking during special events, like the Thieving Outfit event, the Herblore event, you name it. Anytime there's a special outfit event, shark outfit, it can rise for that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is, you know, just another way of seeing, okay, so if we gave you a free key this month, is engagement on Treasure Hunter going to increase? Now, if that's the case, what you could potentially do is you could have a sale on Treasure Hunter keys at various points in the year. So, for example, let's just say we have a weekend here coming up next month, the Labor Day weekend in North America. You would ultimately, say, have a 15% key sale where you would get 15% more keys with your purchase than you would mm-hmm. normally. So if you are able to increase engagement on keys, maybe you'll increase key sales going into the next month. So I think that is likely what this is about. And I think you hit the nail on the head with this possibly being a good just experiment, because it's kind of hard to model this kind of data unless you have a huge set. So, yeah, from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah.
But I'm not complaining.
No, I'm not planning on buying any keys anytime soon. So I'm just going to take the extra data key and be happy with that.
Yep, indeed. Other things you can get this month for real-world money on RS is the Crystal Peacock pet if you purchase a RuneScape game card. So basically the idea behind this is that you purchase a game card and you unlock this a pet. Oh, and we were discussing before the show, this is coming for Premier Club members. So Premier Club members will get this out of the box this year.
Yeah, just Gold Premier, I think, right?
Yeah, that's right. I just noticed that on the Vine here, showing the animation of it. So that's how they're going to put it out to those users. And if you want this, then you can pick up any game card. So, and this is, of course, between August 1st and 31st. And as long as you redeem the card between those days, your account will be credited with the pet. So, yeah, I like the way the Crystal Peacock looks as a pet, but I'm not really a pet person, so I can't see myself purchasing a game card just to get the Crystal Peacock.
I haven't seen them in game yet. I just hope that like the animation when the peacock spreads all its feathers will not be too obtrusive, like Shadow Dragons or something.
Yeah, are you looking at the news page here? Because they got a Vine video. It's hard to tell the scale of it because there's a mushroom in the back, but it doesn't look too absurd.
True. I guess we'll have to see in how it looks in game, but yeah, I'm always a bit skeptical about new pets. Ever since they pulled that trick with the Shadow Dragons.
And then they say there's more. In addition to the Crystal Peacock, subsequent months will bring Crystal Peacock armor landing in September and Crystal Peacock weapons in October. So basically these are going to be Peacock weapon overrides over the next 3 months.
I think some JMod is very obsessed with peacocks.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an exotic bird, right? I mean, unless they're a big fan of Clue with Ms. Peacock in that game, you know?
I suppose so. It's this is one of those things where Jagex brings out a thing like a pet or an override, and I'm like, what? Why?
But why?
Yeah, some of the overrides are so incredibly random. Like, this is a Crystal Peacock. Okay.
It doesn't even fit within the game, unless it's, you know, some Eastern Lands hunting motif.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we'll leave it at that. Before we get to the patches this week, they are already teasing what we're going to be seeing at RuneFest on the 17th of September. So, in order of perhaps what Jagex feels most important, discussing the next RS skill. That's right. We'll be asking you guys what you want from the next RuneScape skill. Come along and join the discussion.
So, was I the only one that immediately noticed the lack of the word elite in this sentence?
That's right. And you know, this is something we've discussed extensively at length on the podcast, is that, you know, after the rollout of Invention and just the way Invention came out and just interacting with the game, some of us don't feel like it needs to actually be an elite skill. And we kind of have the idea that elite skills might end up being decoupled from, you know, the game and just acting as standalone skills, especially based on the way that, you know, the rollout's been, like with the XP curve and all that. But that was a discussion in previous months. So very interesting catch there that it's not going to be the next elite skill.
Yeah, and I'm always also a bit scared. I don't think RuneScape right now needs new skills. I think it needs the old skills revamped.
Yes, and we'll get to that later because we have a discussion about that.
This first thing, when I read this, I was scared. I'm still scared. I think this is completely the wrong decision. And the fact that Jagex has even dropped this now, there's no going back anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
What are they doing?
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what is ultimately suggested. Number two is meet your favorite streamers on the day and in a live Q&A.
Oh my, that's just what I've always wanted.
Absolutely. And in that case, moving on. An hour of reveals about next year's RS content. 2017 is going to be one heck of a year, and thanks to your contributions in the 2017 survey, we are now in a position to share our plans with you.
Now, this is a big surprise.
You think?
No, not at all. I'm in quite a sarcastic mood right
now. Okay. Yeah, I can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that this survey went over well, and I hope it has, you know, helped, because I would be interested to see alongside the survey about what Jagex would have done had it not been for the survey. So
the survey didn't contain any mention of a new skill or elite skill, didn't it?
That's right.
Because I remember actually talking about the fact that there was no elite skill in there. So are they gonna squeeze in a skill in 2017 anyway because maybe the survey didn't work out? Or is this 2018 territory we're talking about? This is...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you have skills that are simple like Hunter and whatnot, so it could be a Hunter-type skill. But the question is, what can you put in-game that's not already in-game and wouldn't seem copy-like or repetitive from other games? So
Sailing.
Well, I mean, with the Ark, so...
Nah, they already put sailing in the game.
That's true. And catch up on the content still to come this year, including the Ark Chapter 2, Fate of the Gods 2, and our mods love a good old chinwag, and we can't wait to tell you about the rest of 2016, including the next Eastern Land steps and beyond. Way to go, Jayek, saying the same thing in two sentences. So... Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting RuneFest. We'll talk more about the stage schedule later, but right now, we have either the chance, I think, to be either horrendously disappointed with what's revealed or to be absolutely surprised, because they did say that there are things coming that have not been teased yet and were not on the survey.
Yeah, I mean, for me... last year's RuneFest was a bit underwhelming, and if I remember correctly, the year before was really exciting.
Yeah. So, the year before was NXT.
Yeah, right. True. So, I mean, for me, the last two RuneFests has made, for me, a bit of a decreasing line of quality and expectations. And now that I see this, and we're going to talk about the schedule in a bit, this is the first year I'm unable to actually watch the streams, and this is also the first year that maybe I don't really care that much.
Yeah.
So
I was really looking forward to, you know, coming up with a grand schedule for RSBNB update here, and I'm kind of in the same boat as you about whether or not we're going to need to watch live, because it just seems like with last year's idea of, you know, we're going to write news posts on the day of RuneFest and put that out for discussion and whatnot. Is it going to be grand enough that we need to do live coverage? So we'll see about that. All right, well, let's move into the meat of the matter then this week, and that's the tweaks and fixes. The bulk majority of them focusing in on the Arc. So let us begin. So the tweaks and fixes for the Arc are a lot focused on balancing and making the Arc feel more worthy, which they needed to do because, as we said last week, aside from some lore and some mini quests, after you've done that, there's really no reason to go back unless you're going for completionist. So I'll start off this list here and you can just jump in whenever you want. Rosie has been feeling generous lately and so will now allow players to grab 5 supplies from her crate for free every day. So for those of you guys who have not gone to the Arc yet, 5 supplies equates to 1 short voyage.
Because I think people were just not feeling inclined to gather things to do a journey. So when they released this, I was like, all right, that means 1 small journey every day. So I did that for 2 days and I was like, this is boring. I haven't gone back there because
And plus, you know, the small journeys do not, they have a chance of giving 0 or 1 rare resource. So I mean, that's why it's not really that lucrative. And this equates to 250 chimes before reduction. So it is saving you a good deal amount of time. And you can stack them up. So there is that. You don't need to use them on the day. So that's positive. And also on this, the cost to purchase Uncharted Isle supplies has been reduced from 50 chimes to 40. And this can be even further reduced by purchasing supply cost reduction upgrades to as low as 20 chimes per supply. Previously 40. So I think that is a lot better. You know, that's more than a 50% reduction in terms of how much the chimes initially cost. And when you consider that, you know, 1 short voyage would cost, you know, 250 chimes, and that's, you know, 250 bamboo cut, this is saving us a lot of time. So
yeah, very good. So this is more than a 50% reduction in the price of supplies, right? This is substantial. And I imagine that it's really difficult to balance and make a big upgrade like this. But if you have to go in the week behind, like the week after releasing it, and lower the main currency of journeys by more than 50%, then you did something completely wrong. So this makes me wonder, after they made the update, did they go in with an account and actually play the content?
Because, I
read this and I was like, all right, dude, what led you to the original price of 50? And I have made a game myself and I'm trying to put myself in their position, trying to imagine what they did. And my only... Yeah, so what I think they're doing is they made the update and they were like, all right, now we have to test it. But by the time you have to test it at the end, like the full final test, you have played that content so often you get bored with it, sort of.
Right.
So probably what they did, they were like, all right, I have to collect bamboo now to collect chimes. So they collect like 2 bamboo and they're like, all right, this works. Then they go in the command console, give themselves like 1,000 bamboo or something. And, I mean, you have to play this content without cheats. That's the point. And I think they haven't done that.
Yeah. And
I don't want to blame or I want to put them in a bad position and saying they screwed up. But that is what they did in the end. Because this is, like, we will go down and see a lot more things in the patch list. And they're all substantial changes. This cannot be explained by... We made a slight, we guessed wrongly because there's always going to be issues that come up when people play it.
I mean,
but not-
let's just for the sake of argument assume that they did test it manually, like you said, and it was deemed acceptable. What if the anticipations and expectations of what JX thinks of the content don't match up with the player base, and the player base wanted it to be faster, and, you know, this met, you know, internal checklist for JX? What if that just didn't jive with the community? Like, I think that's the other possible option here. But I think by this point, JX should know the community and know how the community likes their content to be played. So they could have done this the first week.
So last week we talked about this before, and we were like, you come in, you have to do mini quests, and you have to collect enough supplies for your first journey to an Uncharted Isle. And that's literally the first thing you do in the arc. And it takes you 20 minutes.
To have a first chance at it.
To have your first...
Because you need 5 driftwood.
So since last episode, I had actually had the chance of playing it. It took me 3 journeys to get enough driftwood.
Yep,
that sounds about 150. Right. Am I saying that correctly? Is that one... That's 15 supplies.
Yep.
Multiplied by 50. I'm not even going to do the math. It's like 750, right?
Yeah.
That's 750 bamboo. It took me over an hour to collect that.
Yep.
I didn't have fun with the update. I'm very sorry. And this is not going to change it.
It's a grind.
But still, if that is the first thing you do in an update, and you realize it in the game design, you must realize that there is something wrong with your content. I can keep going at this for hours.
And probably. I mean, I think it comes from a fundamental design flaw within the arc. They're trying to create, you know, a brand new economy and put us back to how we all were when RS first started out. But the vast majority of people out there do not want to have, you know, a fresh start where you're starting from zero GP, working your way up, smithing that first bronze bar, the first steel bar, selling it for 600 GP, buying a better pickaxe, and then continuing it on until you have 1K, 10K, 20K, etc. So I think that that's what feeling they were trying to create, which might not have been the very best.
The difference is, if you are level 1 smithing, you go, or level 1 mining and smithing, say, you go to one of the mines and you do one inventory of half tin, half copper. That's going to get you a level.
Yeah.
And then you go to smith those bars, or melt those bars, and smith them into bronze daggers. That's going to give you a level. Like, there is no grind involved at the start. It's really quick milestones. Here you start out with a grind of like an hour before you actually reach your first milestone. It's like, that's just stretching content. I think this update is a huge blunder, and I think there were some fundamental design flaws. And I mean, I have worked on features for a game before, and it took me an hour or maybe multiple hours or even multiple days to implement it. Then I played it, and then it turned out to not be fun. And we completely scrapped it from the game.
Right.
And we were in a position to do so. We didn't have like a deadline. We didn't have any promises out. And the point is, JX has this deadline of weekly updates, or almost weekly updates. So if they found out that the arc is not fun at all weeks before releasing it, what do? They cannot just say, all right, we're going to start over entirely. I think this is sort of what might have happened throughout the process of this update. Like, so they designed it, they made it, and only very late in the process they might have realized that there is much grind involved, but by then it's too late to turn it around.
Yeah.
And because you have all these BTS videos, right?
Uh-huh.
If you say, this month we're going to release the arc, and then 2 days later, after releasing that BTS video, you're like, oh, this is not actually very much fun. And you put some stuff together to make it presentable and release it by the end of the month in a decent shape. Because you can't just say, well, remember that ARC update we announced? We're going to delay that to 2018 or 17, sorry.
Well, we heard that last week with mining and smithing, but I mean, okay, that's an entirely different scenario.
I mean, that's a different scenario. Yeah. But
when
might have happened.
The poll for the Ark came out in February, correct? Or January or something like that.
Around that time, yeah.
So that's about 6 months development cycle. So let's walk the listeners through this. And I think 1 to 2 months for prototyping and design is probably the way to go on something of this scope, I'd say. Graphically, content-wise, I'd imagine. Does that sound good to you?
1 to 2 months to prototype this with one team. Yeah, sounds
okay.
About right.
And then, so that puts us, let's just assume beginning of February, we got the verdict. We're going to go with the Ark. So that puts us at April, which was 4 months ago. So now let's just assume 3 months now for implementation. So
I mean, by the time, like the first month is probably mostly design and concept art.
Yes.
And by the time you have a design and concept art for the update, so you can put the graphics team to work and you can say, all right, now you need to do that. And we have the procedural generation of the islands. So as soon as you realize you're going to have that, maybe you don't even have the full design ready yet. You can already start work on parts of the update. So when I say that it takes 1 to 2 months, that is the initial startup time. During the months after, there's still going to be many design decisions.
Right.
And yeah.
And the point that I'm trying to illustrate here to the listeners is that 2 months or a month and a half are burned by prototyping, design, concepts, and all that. Then another 3 months for implementation. That brings us up to potentially 5 months, which is June. So then you have a month for polishing and fixing, and this comes out at the end of July. And then there's just no time to turn around.
Yeah, but let's say that indeed it took these 5 months to make the update, and then you have the full thing. And if that's the first moment you actually get to play to the full content, you have an issue if it isn't fun.
Yeah.
Because by then you have the whole thing in place.
Yeah.
And you can't start over.
Yeah.
So that's why you need... So in theory, what you need is you need a prototype that you make in a week, 2 weeks. You can make... It can be really rough. But it should already give you an idea.
That's what
they
did with Chronicle, and look at the success that's having.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. I hope Jagex learns from this. I think it's a bit of a blunder, to be honest. But I hope that Jagex will do some sort of meeting and talk about what happened, what went wrong, and hopefully they can prevent this in the future.
Absolutely. And you know, one thing I think that would have greatly helped with this is a player beta server for these large updates. You can have a beta server, have it NDA'd, have, you know, a wide cross section of players, and let the players play it when Jagex is QA testing it in, you know, late May and June. This entire patch week would not have happened if players had been involved in this.
Yeah. I said you have to play through this content like on a non JMod account without cheating. I mean, if you want, you can like set up the account with like the right levels and such, but then you should play the content like a normal player without cheating. And I understand that takes a lot of time, and you might even have to do multiple iterations with like balance changes and a big piece of content like this that's going to take a lot of time. And like you said, I think there would be many players who would actually be happy to help with this. So
yeah. Yeah, definitely. So there's also some resource-based costs that have been adjusted, as well as sell-in price increases. So shiny shell clippings from Hunter now sell for 2 chimes rather than 1. Elias Salt now sells for 5 chimes. Turtle Bowls sell for 9. Fish Oil, 9. Shiny Turtle Bowls, 12. Wobble Gong Oil, 12. Arc Gumbo, 45 chimes. And Shark Soup, 50 chimes. So a bunch of simple balancing changes for costs, making getting chimes easier and making your skilling in the Ark feel more worthwhile, which definitely needed to happen. So we're not going to belabor the same point that we've just been on, but this is exactly the same issue that we saw with the bamboo gathering and the early resources to get supplies. So, I mean, it's not surprising given the general arc of this.
So, oh.
Yeah, you see what I did there, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Also, the commodity sell it price increase upgrade now costs 8,000 chimes, down from 12,000. Players who have previously purchased the upgrade will have their surplus chimes refunded after logging in. That's good.
Another 33% price cut. I rest my case.
Yeah, these things are substantial. Teletams to Wyco Market are now available from the Wyco Reward Shop. They are not consumed if they have already, or if you are already on the island of Wyco, and can be equipped in the pocket slot.
So this is one of these updates that I can imagine people overlooking, or maybe this was a request from somebody on Reddit or whatever. And this is the kind of update I do expect a week after the update.
Yeah, I mean, this is smart, right?
Yeah, I mean, a teletap to Wyco. I mean, yeah, please.
I mean, at least it's not a lodestone.
True.
So, also, Tarpon, Searfish, and Siligo models have had their colors adjusted in order to differentiate, make them differentiate easier. Once again, another thing that you would expect in a week follow-up patch note.
This is debatable. I think Jarek should have some sort of like checklist for color distinctions, especially for colorblind people.
Yes, and you know, we have Tanis on Informer who is colorblind and has poor vision overall due to a condition. And while RuneScape is accessible, there are certain areas of content, namely quests, that are pretty bad for accessibility. So, I mean, while Jagex is good, they could definitely work on these kind of things off out of the gate.
I mean, there are literally tools available that sort of simulate how colorblind people see a computer. So, in addition to playing through the content using a non-JMod account, they should also make it standard to play through the content using those filters. Again, this adds a lot of overhead on actually playing through all the content. But, I mean, if you want to have your content ready when you release it, you need to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah. And also moving on with this, respawn rate for ornate turtles has been increased slightly. So once again, another balancing change in with the other balancing changes from up top. Altered tooltips on the Uncharted Isles travel interface to reflect the number of resources a player can hope to gain from spending those hard-earned supplies. Small will give you 0 to 1, medium 1 to 2, and large 2 to 3. So, that's good to know going in because, I mean, like you said, you did 3 small ones in order to get the 5 driftwood you needed for the first mini quest.
Yep.
The player's own ship, not rowboat, in the Uncharted Isles now has shadows and reflections. Okay. Along with this, Shane would like to name his own ship, seeing as you helped build it and crew it. I think allowing the player to name the ship would be a great thing to do.
I wasn't there to build it, sadly.
Yeah, they built it for you.
Yeah.
Chimes are now occasionally dropped by NPCs found on the Uncharted Isles. This was hot fixed in last week. They have an uncommon drop rate, and from spending about 2.5 hours at the Dragons on Iminishi, I got around, I want to say, 350 charms.
Another victory for the PVMs.
That's right. The issue in rare cases of high-level resources on Uncharted Islands were depleting after one harvest has now been fixed. So,
fair enough.
Yeah. Anything else in the patch notes arc-wise that jumps out at you? These were mainly my highlighting notes here, but if you have any, we can discuss.
That was
those.
The one where the ship was floating in midair.
Oh,
one of the arcs, right?
That's been fixed, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, finally. Yeah. I saw
that
when that
like
happened, and it just didn't look good. And I was surprised that made it through.
Yeah, same.
That was disappointing, I must admit. All right. Anything else arc-related? I don't think so. I mean, I think we have pretty much hammered home the point here that, you know, it you shouldn't need to make these kind of huge balancing changes a week after the update if it's been played through properly. Unless, of course, Jagex was assuming the players would take a slower XP rate, which by this point should be painfully obvious to any astute observer.
Yeah. I mean, the alternatives we came up with were either Jagex doesn't know their community at all, or Jagex completely screwed up actually testing this update. So either way, they don't come out great.
Yeah.
This conclusion.
Yeah. And I mean, you had excellent points here from, you know, using the colorblind filters to testing methodology. And, you know, it's interesting that some of this stuff isn't actually, it is probably wanted to be looked at inside Jagex, but it certainly doesn't feel like it has been done, right?
No, I mean, these are such obvious oversights that, I mean, there should be a checklist for these things to go to for every update.
Yeah. It's not a matter, does the code compile and does it work and does it achieve the expected outcome? Is that outcome going to be able to enhance our gameplay to the level that we want?
Yeah.
So, anyways, a bit of a happier note here in the patch notes. Players who have the 2015, the 15-year anniversary emote can now perform the 2010 variant. So I'm going to ask you, what happened in 2010?
You're going to ask me what happened in 2010?
That's right.
Oh, that's 6 years ago. That may be the year I started uni, actually. I mean, I know what happened in my life, but I have no idea what happened in RuneScape,
all right,
to be honest.
Well, 2010 dealt with Nomad, Soul Wars, and there's a big one. You don't have a final guess?
The year of Nomad.
Dungeoneering.
No. Dungeoneering was 2010. Wow.
Yeah.
That content held up really, really well then. Like graphically.
Yeah, that's right. So if you look at the 2010 emote, you'll see that you have Nomad appearing on one side of it, then Nomad getting slayed by you. And then at the opposite end of it, you'll see the animation that happens when a player enters a dungeon. And then finally you have the dungeon reward chest where you're claiming a reward from it. And the ferret from that one puzzle room comes out of the treasure chest.
Oh, the ferret of doom.
That's right.
Oh, I like what they did with that.
Yeah.
I don't like the puzzles, but I like what they did with the ferret.
Yeah, so, I mean, really interesting that Nomad was on there. That surprised me. I had no idea it had been that long. I thought it was longer than that.
Yeah, so. It surprised me that Nomad and Dungeoneering were in the same year. But to be honest, I never looked at these emotes after like the first month. I don't know.
Yeah. Nomad's Requiem was January 11th, 2010.
Oh, wow.
So, well, I mean, I guess not Soul Wars. I thought Soul Wars and Nomad came out at the same time, but Soul Wars was there for a bit first. So, obviously, Nomad's Requiem. A long time ago. It took me, for the record, a lucky 13 tries in order to finish Nomad. How many tries did it take you?
I had to rush the quest because I wanted to finish it before EOC came out, because I thought EOC would make it harder. Joke's on me. EOC made it incredibly easy to kill Nomad.
EOC
but
was
I did
2012,
it.
Though.
Yeah, but I wasn't at that. In 2010, I wasn't at the point of getting close to the quest cape.
Okay.
So I did it in 2010, and I think it took me like 4 tries.
Oh, well, there you go.
But I spent hours upon hours reading strategy guides because I was so scared. And I bought new armor. I got all the best stuff I could eat. And eventually I did it. So I was shaking. I remember shaking after that.
What about Dungeoneering? Were you always a fan of Dungeoneering from the very beginning?
No, I hated it.
Yeah, me too. I still hate it.
Yeah, I really like it now. It's actually a lot of fun if you start doing it with people you know and you start finally learning the tricks and you become a bit of how can you optimize the path to your dungeon. And it's Dungeoneering is just not grinding. Some people call it a minigame. I think that's the strongest point of the skill.
All right. Well, maybe you'll convince me one day then. I'm currently level 95, and I'm content to leave it at that just for now. So
I'm level 110.
Oh, well, there you go. So you got some work to do still before the Master Quest Point cape, yeah?
Yeah, I want to get 115 for the mall, actually.
Oh, right. Yeah, that would be good.
That's even more.
That would be good.
Yeah. It's a lot of XP. 110 to 115 is more than 1 to 99. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about some PvP stuff, shall we?
Oh, do we have to?
Well,
I thought this was already going to be a very PvP-based month.
Well, I mean, this is looking forward to the end of the year now. Design document on Bounty Hunter and Deathmatch PvP. So, as you can imagine, Deathmatch is basically a free-for-all PvP combat encounter that takes place in the Crucible. Up to 30 players will join the arena, and they will have 10 minutes to kill as many of each other as possible. And once the game is over, players will receive reward points based on how well they performed during the fight. Now,
let's do a bet. How many days before it's death content?
And see, I don't want it to be dead content because I think it's a really interesting strategy for PvP because everyone starts off at the same slate of having nothing. Mm-hmm. So, previously PvP was so imbalanced because you would have players coming in with their seismics and, you know, all their power armor and whatnot, and you would have other people who had just had, you know, Barrow's armor and they would get annihilated right away. Here, the only differentiating factor is that people above 100 combat are separated from those below it, though the people below 100 combat can join the higher encounter if they so choose to.
But how many people are going to play this and be below level 100?
Right. So,
Maybe some
the free-to-play worlds.
Oh, right. Maybe that. And maybe some purists will... Maybe this will have a new... maybe this will encourage people to find pure builds that stay just below level 100 combat.
Maybe.
But
because it's entirely possible with the combat formula and the way combat works, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
And then you can turn off getting combat experience doing PvP encounters.
That's right.
That way, just
That's
play
right.
it.
So throughout the 10 minutes, you're rewarded whenever you kill someone, and the player who did the most damage will be awarded the kill. So you don't need to get the final blow. All players that did damage over a certain threshold are rewarded with an assist for that kill. And around the arena, there are power-ups which will help players do better by killing the most other players in the possible time given. So I think that Jagex is on the right track when it comes to Bounty Hunter and just making it a straight-up PvP engagement. And now I think where things get hairy is when the power-ups come into play here, because if we look at the power-up list here, they don't necessarily seem balanced. And it starts with the way that they're placed around. They're placed around in the standard positioning throughout all encounters. So if you played Deathmatch before, you'll know where they are. Though there are super power-ups that are randomly placed in the arena, so you do have that going for you. Now, the interesting...
I mean, this what you're saying is that net map knowledge is going to help you be better at this game.
That's right.
But most competitive games have pre-designed maps, and so map knowledge is going to help you either way in those games as well. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a really bad thing.
Okay. Well, some of the regular power-ups include armor. So a large gold trim pickup, which is on the long respawn, gives the player 100 armor, and the smaller untrimmed pickup is on a shorter respawn, gives the player 50 armor. Armor provides an active damage reduction against all damage types. A player receives 0 to 33% damage for their first 100 armor, 33 to 100% damage reduction for the next 100% armor, and armor will max out at 200, which will provide 100% damage immunity. And as the player takes damage, their amount of armor will degrade based on the amount of damage they would have taken before it was reduced. So that's power up number one. What do you think of that mechanic?
It's a bit like armor in Chronicle, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
It's like just like another layer before health. I don't know. It's basic, but it works.
Yeah. Healing over time power up will give the player a constant healing effect, similar to the enhanced Excalibur. It lasts for 45 seconds and will heal 10% of a player's maximum potential life points every 3 seconds. So that's 990 life points if you're level 99 every 3 seconds.
Substantial.
Yep. And now the super power-ups, hardest to obtain, and they're not active at the start of the game and have variable respawn time. Currently, respawn times are between 2.5 and 3.5 minutes. And when the super power-up spawns, all players will be notified through the important information box. There are multiple super power-up spawn locations spaced out far apart from each other. And when a super power-up spawns, the player doesn't know which of these locations just became active. This is deliberate as it funnels players to three areas instead of just one, which could get too chaotic with 30 players. And now some of these ones are overpowered, which will cause all attacks performed by the player to do 4 times the amount of damage they would normally do for 30 seconds. So basically a huge damage buff there, which is interesting. And I can see that being used as a way to destroy armor.
Mm-hmm.
This one's kind of hilarious here. Cabbage time turns all food in the inventories of all other players in the arena to cabbage for 20 seconds. And after 20 seconds, the food will return to your inventory. Eating cabbage will not use up the food you previously had, and if you don't have space in your inventory after the time is up, the food will be banked. If it cannot be banked, it will be dropped on the floor, and the player will be notified through the important information box.
Forcing people to eat cabbage.
That's right. And
oh, this is cute. This is cute.
It gets even more hilarious here. The chicken army.
Oh my, what?
Yep. This grants the ability to call upon the chicken army. For every successful hit a player makes with this power-up active, a level 198 chicken will spawn and attack your opponent. Each chicken is the equivalent of a max level player fighting alongside you. These chickens will continue to be added up to a maximum of 10 chickens at a time. They will last for 30 seconds or until the player dies. Once the power-up is done, the chickens will disappear in a puff of smoke. And there's a photo here in the developer document, and it shows just how large the chicken is.
Yeah.
So you see where I said that the normal power-ups were just fine, and then it gets kind of crazy when we get to the super power-ups.
Mm. So what Jagex needs to do with this content, and this ties in nicely with what we talked about in the arc, they need to invite maybe like 100 people, people they know do PvP, go into this game, have them play a few games, and have those players tell Jagex what they think. That's what needs to happen.
Because this can't be dead content.
No.
PvP, you know, was such an integral part of RS from the very beginning.
Yeah.
From, you know, the free-to-play PvP and RS Classic to, you know, RS2 PvP members and free-to-play. So, and, you know, it's largely disappeared. So I think that bringing this back is definitely going to be a positive thing. And they are on their way to doing something successful with PvP, I think. I've said it many times before, PvP needs to be done in mini games, which we have right here. the clans, and in the wilderness. So,
I mean, right now, if I look at like the pictures, it looks a bit like slapped together from existing models.
Well, so yeah, of course.
I hope that they do give it the full attention and not just try to touch it up a bit with what they have, because this is... PvP is one of those things that keeps games, especially MMOs, alive. So, yeah, this and like actual group content, maybe. So, it should not be underestimated how important it is to make this update successful. Because if this is not successful, then I think PvP players might permanently say goodbye to Inkscape.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that with RS2, I mean, RS EOC, you can do PvP, though I don't think it's going to have the responsiveness that people are expecting, largely because of the tick system. And when, if you are looking at other PvP-based things, you could go play something like Heroes of the Storm or League of Legends or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you want, you know, PvP that uses abilities, which is kind of what EOC was initially designed to be. So, but that's what Bounty Hunter, or rather Deathmatch, is going to look like. There's also other power-ups that are going to be coming, including Vampirism, Adrenaline Boost, Cooldown Removal, and Call Upon the Ninja Team. I mean, Death Lotus Assassins, Jagex says. So. And then there's also going to be a Supreme Hunter mechanic that'll come into effect, which is just like the original Crucible used to be, and also a mechanic to enable PvP hotshots and a more and fun tension in the arena. So they are going back to the original, Deathmatch and Crucible. I don't know if that's particularly necessary, because I think up until the point of reading Supreme Hunter, that what was being discussed here sounded, you know, unique and original, and it potentially had the ability to work. But I think that bringing in the original Crucible content is likely a mistake, because what this is essentially doing is it's just slapping together a bunch of PvP mechanics and putting it all in this huge one minigame, rather than being, you know, one elegant deathmatch style minigame. So we'll see how this works, but I'm not a fan of the Supreme Hunter mechanic or the original Crucible stuff.
They are making something new, and now they slap in the Crucible and make it basically an iteration on that, which will already give it some sort of negative. I mean, people are not going to be... I mean, people don't like the Crucible, and people are going to look at this like, this is just still the Crucible, so...
Yeah. Like, for example here, when the Supreme Hunter is assigned, they'll be given the weapons for the role, and everyone will be told who the Supreme Hunter is. The Supreme Hunter can attack anyone and be attacked by everyone, so... Yeah, so...
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah, me too. So we'll just have to wait and see about that. And at the end of the game, or once players reaches 30 minutes, the game will end and show the rankings for all players that took part. You will see their rank, their name, how many kills, how many times they died, and how many assists they were awarded. So practically Call of Duty score panel.
So do you think this would be possible to like go into a group or something and play it with just clanmates? Because I think that's also very important.
Yeah, that would be great.
I mean, I don't want to play this with strangers. This is way more fun if you know the people on Discord or voice chat or something, and be like, "Behold my army of evil chickens," and make it like funny,
yeah,
or something. I'm not very good at being funny on voice chat, as you can probably imagine, because my evil chicken line is not that good.
Oh, if you guys want fun on voice chat, you just ought to visit the RSBNB Discord server. Yeah, but we'll save that for another day and leave the warnings aside from that. Let's just say that Earth has a little bit too much fun sometimes in there.
You only have to look at the names of the channels to...
Yeah, that's right. Well, they've actually been put back to normal, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Yep. All right, so the second PvP style coming in is Bounty Hunter, which they are marketing as an extension to the wilderness and themes it up with a mini game. Players are periodically assigned to kill a target and gain rewards for killing that target, known as a bounty kill. And while waiting for a target, the players are welcome to kill anyone they see that isn't their target, and this is known as a rogue kill. This will take place on Bounty Hunter Worlds. There will be two worlds, one for Legacy and one for EOC. Because EOC and Legacy cannot competitively fight each other. I'm glad we're finally admitting that. The bounty system, after a short period of being logged into a bounty world, the two players will be assigned to kill each other as bounty targets. It is down to these two players to find and kill each other's, and a narrow hint arrow will show up on the screen at the direction the target can be found at, and an unlockable spell will offer a teleport directly to their bounty target. I'm kind of glad that they put this in, because if I recall, one of the problems with the original Bounty Hunter is that it was entirely possible to evade your target and, you know, just keep running away from them.
Huh.
So, there's that. And they say it should take around 15 minutes on average to find your target. Which, I mean, I don't know if that's the amount of investment we're going for this, because we know that the deathmatch PvP minigame is maximum 10 minutes or 30 kills. So I guess this one's a bit longer, but I think 10 minutes is kind of a nice time for a minigame, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what they're saying here is while waiting, players are encouraged to fight other players waiting for a target and will be rewarded for doing so. I'm not entirely sure how that's going to work out.
Yeah, there's lots of questions here. And, I mean, anytime you're dealing with a PvP-based system, you got to have some kind of external testing. You can't just, you know, go out and hope it's going to work. So, I don't want to say too much more about this, because we've already had a bounty hunter in the game here, and this seems like a much better version of it. I will just say that bounty rating is going to be based on ELO this time, which for anyone who has played other games knows that basically this means that your ranking is determined based on who kills you and who you kill and how that goes for you. And then you'll be ranked based on players of similar skill. And so the logic is that as time goes on, you will have better bounty hunter experiences. And all the brackets are named after various revenants in RS. So Imp, Goblin, Ice Fiend, Pyre Fiend, Hobgoblin, Vampire, Werewolf, Cyclops, Hellhound, Demon, Orc, Dark Beast, Knight, and Dragon. So there we go.
Sounds reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Then there's going to be a huge reward store that's tied between these two and high scores. The rewards from Deathmatch are untradeable and limited to entry-level PvP rewards, whereas Bounty Hunter are mostly tradable and have no limit on how powerful they can be. So, for example, some of the Deathmatch rewards here, as we're running short on time. Preserved Shark is a pack of untradeable sharks. Superior Rock Shell Armor, Tier 65 melee armor, so once again, entry-level that you can use. Supreme Champion's Helm, same as existing, but will require you to have been the same Supreme Champion to buy. Corrupted Rogue Gloves, going on at level 65, going all the way up to level 85 for Atrocious Rogue Gloves, which are basically just hybrid gloves. So that's kind of stuff you can expect from Deathmatch PvP. The interesting note is that the Bounty Hunter teleport spell will be unlocked from Deathmatch rather than Bounty Hunter. So.
Okay.
Yeah, teleports you within 5 tiles of your bounty target.
I have the feeling they should be kept separate, but okay.
Who knows? Like,
people might be interested in Bounty Hunter and not interested in Deathmatch, and now you're sort of forcing them to do Deathmatch, otherwise they will have a disadvantage in doing Bounty Hunter.
Yeah. And I mean, this is very valuable feedback that we're given based on this. So it can only get more valuable when you let players be involved with this. So that would be definitely something, hopefully, that is done internally or externally with this.
Yeah.
Bounty Hunter rewards include things like Brawling Gloves, which, you know, we already have in game. Rune pouches, which are going to be tradable, hold up to 16,000 of three types of runes equipped in the ammo slot. I think we were asking for this, weren't we?
At some point. I don't remember, but yeah. I'm a bit sad that this has to be a reward from PvP, though.
Yeah.
I want this, but... Oh, it's tradable, so...
Wilderness Hilt upgrades Dragon Dagger, Claws, Long Mace, and Scimitar to tier 70.
Okay.
Degrades back to base after a short period or a set number of special attacks. See, I think they did this because tier 60 is relatively pitiful in terms of being able to do damage at high tier or at high level. Whereas if you're wanting a special attack, tier 70 you can kind of get by with.
Hmm.
Adrenaline Crystal adds to an Adrenaline Potion and upgrades it to Superior Adrenaline Potion. Also upgrades a Replenishment Potion if added directly. And upgrades to pots provide 30% more Adrenaline. There's also going to be a Tier 70 Amulet, which buffs and add-ons that are linked to the original Six Barrows armor sets. So that's interesting. Amulet of the Forsaken, it's called. Crucible weapons will have tier 87 stats with the following special attacks. Here we go. Decimation, which is the bow attack. Your next ability will hit all enemies within three tiles of you. Annihilation is the maul, which is gravitate. Each attack does 5% more damage until you miss, capping at 50%. We'll have a time cap on it to stop it from being infinite. And obliteration for the staff will devour and steal your opponent's buffs, including things like vengeance, stun immunity, and overload.
Ooh.
So tier 87 weapons with special attacks coming from Bounty Hunter.
Okay.
I think that those weapons are going to be the most interesting because it's the first time we've seen special attacks since the Staff of Light, I want to say.
Yeah, so...
Or
I mean,
God Wars 2, I guess, has special attacks, but...
Yeah, I mean, at least this adds, like, the rewards are quite a good incentive
mm-hmm.
to do this PvP. So, I mean, that's a start.
Yeah, it is. Well, the sad news is to say about the release, it's been pushed back to later in 2016 as more time was needed to make the ELO ratings and matchmaking server. Okay, so late 2016, I thought based on this amount of detail that was unveiled, we'd be looking at 17, but I guess not.
Yeah, I mean, they have been working on this for quite a while then, because this is quite... a big update, so definitely interesting to see that they take this seriously, and this seems to be something so far that they haven't really asked opinions of from the community, so we'll have to see how that works out.
Yeah.
Maybe we will have a huge backlash on this as well from the community.
I think the PvPers are gone, so I don't think you'll have that.
Oh, that solves the issue then.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just have a quick look at this week's behind the scenes video, which is detailing the wilderness improvements and achievement diary. Also, did you note that they're calling it an achievement diary this time around rather than a task set, which with all the other ones have been called task sets recently?
No, I did not realize that because I always, I mean, I still know the Achievement Diary name.
Yeah, me too.
That's the old name. Maybe they still call it that internally. I mean, I know how easy it is to mix up like actual names and like code names you still use internally.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't look for anything behind it. I think we're all going to lose Taskmaster. Well, I'm not going to lose it. I still don't have it, but. I think it's going to be included.
Yeah, so this is coming next week with the Achievement Diary and the Wilderness rework, including the Divination Spot in the Wilderness that will scale in XP for whatever level you are, the Farming Patch that allows you to plant the herbs that grow potions, and just in general, a graphical rework to Areas of the Wilderness, including the Rogue Store, which, I mean, when you think about it, when was the last time it was worthwhile going to the Rogue Store in RS? It has to have been way back to RS2, maybe even RS Classic, so... I think it's going to be very interesting to see if they can revive interest here in the wilderness with this.
I may have been there once to spy on a penguin.
Yeah, that could be it. They're also making the rogues area, if you're not Scald, that you'll be attacked and these guys will hit you hard. So there's actually a reason why you might want to be Scald in this area. But... I mean, of course, this is all coming next week, and I guess there's going to be an influx of PvP, at least temporary, in the wilderness to get people to head in there and see what they can find and kill from people, because this store has items like gold leaves and marble blocks, oddly, the rogue store in the wilderness. Can you believe that?
Interesting.
Reinforcing plates, stones of binding, algorithm thread, and bloodwood seeds that you use to plant the herbs. Each herb seed is 50k. Which, I mean, if it's dropped in the wilderness, I can see that being absolutely, destroyed in terms of value, because if these things are dropped, obviously people are going to have the price from the drop be lower than it is in the store. That's just the general way herb markets work, unless people don't go in the wilderness. So we'll be discussing all this next week, and hopefully none of us will get killed, and be my first time going in the wilderness, aside from the occasional Chaos Tunnels clue scroll, which I just have to run in there quickly. So should be very interesting to see what this does. Because if you think about it, Wilderness hasn't really been updated since RS2, and it's exactly the same as it was when RS2 was released. So it's going to be a huge change.
I think it got a graphical rework.
Well, yeah, graphical.
The lava and such looks really cool.
Yeah, but I mean content-wise.
Well, they added engineering.
Yeah, but that's not really the Wilderness, though, is it?
And they added some quests, like the... Last of the kind, one of the kind.
Oh, right. Yeah, we did have to go in there a bit for that, but
yeah,
nothing too expensive. Other than that,
yeah. It'll be interesting. Definitely going to be very busy the first few days.
Yeah, so. And like we said, you'll definitely want to do these on like the French world or something like that if you're wanting to escape from the PvPers.
Yeah. I'll have to get around to actually doing warbands again to get the task. I have to kill the Chaos Elemental again.
Yeah.
At least I'm going to get the task of jumping over the wilderness wall. That sounds doable. Don't even have to technically enter the wilderness for that.
That's right. That's right. Just because like there's one square wall. That's not wilderness. Yeah. So.
All right.
All right, and also on this behind-the-scenes video, we have the RuneFest 2016 stage times. I'm just going to read some stuff out to you, and this is on the main stage right now. So 11 to 11:15 is the big kickoff. 11:20 to 11:45, RuneScape's rest of the year. 12 to 12:45, lunch with streamers. 1300 to 1345, RuneScape Combat Showcase. RuneScape, sorry. 1400 to 1500, old school, the next 12 months. 1515 to 1615, RuneScape Reveals, that's the 2017 segment. 1630 to 1715, Last Man Standing Tournament. And 1730 to 1900, the Golden Gnomes. So that's what's on the main stage. And now here's what's on the second stage. 1130 to 1145, Idle Adventures. 12 to 12:45, The Future of RuneScape Skilling. 1300 to 1345, Ask the Artists. 1400 to 1445, RuneScape Lore Corner. And finally, capping off the second stage, 1500 to 1545, Chronicle Q&A and Card Painting. Okay. So.
Yeah, where do I start?
We have a huge omission here. And that is the fact is that Skilling Particularly, the future of skilling is relegated to the second stage. Meanwhile, Lunch with Streamers is on the main stage. Now, in the poll, in the survey that came out in May, it was asked, should skilling be on par with combat? And if so, what do you think the outcome of that should be? Now, if that was on the, you know, on the survey and successful, I guess that would have been on the main stage. But since it's on the second stage, I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but I'm not overly optimistic with this.
I mean, look at the main stage content. There is so much community content there and so little actual game content.
You basically have RS Reveals, the rest of 2016, and Old School.
Yeah, and Old School I don't really care about myself.
Oh, and so Combat Showcase, of course.
I don't care about that either. I mean,
Oh, here, get this. On the Combat Showcase, there's two big announcements for 2017.
My left fist and my right fist?
Or maybe they're removing the evolution of combat?
And then adding it back again because it's two announcements.
Oh, boy. But
Shouldn't it then be called the revolution of combat?
Yeah, that's right. But see, I mean, unless the RS Reveals segment is going to knock our socks off, is it worth waiting until the end of the day for that? Because rest of the year, we already know what's coming. We don't need to see more about Fate of the Gods 2, Sliske's Endgame, and the Ark Part 2, because we'll get all that in-game shortly thereafter and through behind-the-scenes videos.
So to be honest, who cares about the Ark anymore? So,
I still got hope that they might make it better in Part 2. Lunch with the Streamers.
Oh, God. Why can't that be on the second stage?
Yeah, that doesn't seem like main content.
All kudos to Jagex to including the community in RuneFest. The community is really important to keeping the community together and the game together. But, I mean, people... So, this is quite funny because it's Lunch with the Streamers. So, people at home get to watch the streamers on stream, which is what they do already anyway.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be more interesting to like actually stream some second stage content instead?
Yeah.
And have the Lunch with Streamers be a purely local event? I mean...
Yeah, like it should be a mingle thing where you get to go meet your streamers and all that stuff. So.
Yeah.
Combat Showcase, I mean, Deathmatch, Crucible, and the making of Telos, and two big announcements for 2017. You can't tell me that there's just going to be two big bosses in 2017 and that's it for combat.
Oh, I wouldn't mind that much if the rest is filled by spilling updates.
Yeah, I guess.
Questing updates.
But then why devote an hour to it at RuneFest, or 45 minutes?
Well, I don't know, actually. I mean, the Deathmatch and the Crucible, we just figured out how that works. But that's not very interesting. I'm not entirely sure if people are interested in the making of Telos. Like, maybe you're interested in that, but it doesn't feel like main stage content. Feels like more of a tiny thing.
Yeah.
So then it comes down to the two big announcements.
Combat based for 2017.
20 minutes each. I don't know.
Who knows? And then an hour for Old School, which, I mean, this might be the most substantive thing that there is if the RuneScape survey is, you know, indicative of what's coming. So
I mean, Old School, as long as it has a community, I guess it gets should deserve a spot on the main stage. I'm not
gonna
watch it.
I mean, it's a part of the obviously it's making money for Jagex. Because you need to have a membership in order to play, right?
So. Yeah.
And then RuneScape Reveals, which is 2017. Familiar from the 2016 survey, others are big, big surprises, and we know one of them is going to be a skill. So.
Yeah.
Any
bets on a skill?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a difficult one.
I mean, if it was me, I'd want the animal husbandry farming elite skill.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
But they didn't say elite skill, as you pointed out.
So we sort of have like a gathering skill for melee combat, and we have like a production skill for melee things, which is mining and smithing. For range, it gets a bit more complicated because there's like
woodcutting, fletching, crafting.
Woodcutting and fletching, but there's also crafting. But then for magic, there's not much. So it's like you can use like crafting for like the armor. So it's like, so maybe some sort of skill like, what's the word for it? Like enchanting or artificing? Like something like that might be interesting as a skill. But yeah, otherwise, I don't miss big chunks of skills.
Yeah, and like we said, they need to work on getting things right, like the mining and smithing update. All the other skills could use reworks too, as we discussed 2 weeks ago. So, yeah.
Bartering could be a skill.
Oh, there you go. And like, I mean, the future of RuneScape skilling, the best thing to do for that segment would be to come out and say, our skills are in disarray. We're going to update all of them. Some of them substantially. Some of them are just going to get balancing updates. But in 2017, you'll see your skills become useful. Some skills, not all of them, will be able to provide income that is competitive with combat. Not overtaking it, but at least competitive, and it will make your skills feel useful. That would be the best thing to come out of the future of RuneScape skilling, I think. And I don't see why that doesn't, why that can't tie in with the reveals for 2017. So.
I know. Ranting is going to be the next skill.
Oh yeah, we could definitely. We could definitely.
Like
work
at level
that.
20, you unlock Reddit or something.
Oh my god. Okay, we're moving on. Okie dokie. So that's it for RS stuff this week. I don't believe there's anything else. We're going to move on to the questions. We got two of them this week. The first one is an audio question from Parnassius.
G'day, Shane, and welcome aboard Sirion. It's Parnassius, and I have a rather long-winded question for you both this week. With the mining and smithing rework being postponed until 2017, because of the backlash from players after the Q&A last week, do you think Jagex once again are kowtowing to the vocal minority who seem to hate upon every new update? Also, do you believe the majority of the complaints are from the PVM community crying because their cash cow of AFKing Slayer monsters for large profits will be taking a hit? Week after week, we see combat updates in the game with very little in the way for the skilling community. Finally, when we get to see a major skilling update that was voted on for the players last year in the poll, it suddenly gets trampled on by the vocal minority who watched the Q&A livestream. The overwhelming majority of the complaints on certain forums was simply that the drop tables of the monsters was not fair and that they wouldn't make as much GP from their AFK training methods of just camping Slayer creatures for sometimes between 2 and 4 million an hour. So, my question is, should Jagex start taking a leaf out of Steve Jobs' book and regard the player base as not knowing what it wants until they, being Jagex, tell them what they want? Also, do you think it's time for Jagex to start pulling back on its transparency and stop giving the players quite so much information on upcoming updates? There seems to be so much negativity aimed at virtually any update that isn't high-level bossing every time Jagex tells us about it, often before it's even released. Finally, do you think Jagex should make a compulsory vote upon login for the mining and smithing rework so that all players do get to have a say, not just the hardcore 500 or 600 that watch the live streams, then scream blue murder over stuff they personally don't like, regardless of how beneficial it is to the main playing game or to the longevity of the game itself? Thanks in advance for taking the time to listen to this long-winded question, and happy RuneScaping to all!
All right. So,
well,
the PVM community dictating the mining and smithing rework because the drop tables aren't appropriate. which is the likely cause, though we haven't necessarily heard from Jagex about mining and smithing, was pushed back to 2017. And that leads to the question, should Jagex be like Steve Jobs? Rather than...
Oh, yeah, we already talked about it last week as well. But, yeah,
and
I mean, you always get this bit of self-selection when it comes to giving feedback on updates. So apart from the fact that only a limited group of people watches the live streams, there's also only a limited group of people that goes on the forums and shout about whatever there's to shout about. Like, if you watch a live stream, you're like, oh, this looks like a cool piece of content. You're not going to go to the forum and be like, oh, this looks like a cool piece of content. You're content. But if you like don't like it, you're going to, oh, I have to shout at somebody because this is going to ruin my AFK training method that I've been using for years now. So I'm going to shout on the forums because maybe somebody will see it. I think that's a bit what's happening here.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, like, if you think about it, I say this whole thing comes back to the PR disaster that was the Evolution of Combat. That resulted in Old School, that resulted in Power to the Players polls, that resulted in Rune Labs, and that resulted in listening to the community on every single detail. I mean, we've even got to the point where JX is showing textures of the Taverly, or rather the White Wolf Mountain rework. Ground textures, as in, do you like the old texture better or do you like the new texture better? Which I mean, it's okay to tease these kind of things, but to ask for opinion on that, and I mean, to think that it could have some sort of sway into whether or not it's viewed, is just absurd to me. So I have to say yes. I have to say yes. I think Jagex would be much better served if we could get back to the old days of being surprised by content.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, you bring up the point of a compulsory vote, and I'm not a huge fan of making things compulsory.
Yeah, same.
And I'm also not a huge fan of saying, do you want this? Yes, no. That I mean, there's, it's always like a gradient. There's like multiple things.
Yeah. Like, but if you make something compulsory, you're not going to get a thoughtful and useful vote. People are just going to vote one way or the other because they have to. They're not going to think about it and come to their own decision.
So, I mean, I wouldn't blame the PVM community because I wouldn't know who actually caused this thing. I think it's wrong to just like isolate a group and say it's their
fault. But
it's likely that it's people who enjoy the game for their combat. It's unlikely that it's the people who like the game for their skilling. And well, I think in this case, people who like the game for their skilling should have a much higher weight because
it's a skilling update for one of the core skills of the game.
It's supposed to fix scaling. Like, combat people, you have an entire game, and I mean, you're not gonna tell me that if we remove all the ore drops and all the weapon drops and armor drops, that all of a sudden combat is not lucrative anymore. Because that is not true. I am sure that the best weapons and armor are still gonna be drops from bosses.
Yeah, and that's the whole outline of the mining and smithing rework. And that, I think, is what Jagex was trying to say, is that, you know, we are going to still put reliance on PVM drops for the best in tier armor and weapons, which I think is fine because that's where you need them. You don't need the best in tier if you're doing Slayer, I can tell you that.
But, yeah, I mean, let's look at that point. Like, should Jagex just keep the update secret and release them at some point without announcing it? I think it won't just magically solve the issue, because right now you're like, all right, when we are going to release this update, we're going to remove all the smithing drops and mining drops from monsters, and people are going to make a huge riot about it. Now, let's say Jagex did not announce any such thing and released an update that all of a sudden removed all the mining and smithing drops from monsters. What effect would that have, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't work today, and I don't think you can get by that in RS.
So, I mean, this riot was going to happen either way. I think by making it announced in advance and on a live stream that is only watched by a subgroup of the people makes it soften the blow a bit. On the other hand, not all people watch the Q&A, so all the subtleties get lost. So Jagex says, all right, we're going to fix mining and smithing, and to do that, we need to make sure that mining and smithing become lucrative again by making combat not completely replace those skills.
And that's the narrative that gets spread on the forums and other cesspools on the internet about this, and that is what destroys updates. That's what's destroyed the credibility of the evolution of combat.
Well, I would actually like to say that's not the narrative that gets spread. The narrative that gets spread eventually is they are going to remove ore and smithing drops from monsters.
That's a subset that's what's of that argument.
And that's what's going to make people riot without understanding the bigger picture it is in. Like, Jagex was, I think, very careful in showing the complete picture. Like, the mining and smithing rework consists of many different elements, and it showed them, all of them, and they were designed to work together and fit together like a jigsaw puzzle. And then one of those things that people don't like gets isolated out, taken out of context, and blows up exponentially everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think it's more of a social issue than an issue with RuneScape, to be honest.
That's right. That's right.
So I think Jagex was wrong in postponing it. Does I think Jagex is all right with sharing things about updates? Yeah. I don't mind. But I also think that Jagex should show some guts and hold their ground.
That's right. And okay, I'll let you finish your thought.
Like, Jagex should say, we designed this, we thought about this, not for one afternoon, no, over a process of many, many weeks. We looked at all the data, we looked at everything we have right now, we took all the feedback we could find and built this design out of it. These are professional game design. Like, sometimes
that's right.
Updates like the Ark
that's right. might
dawdle a bit about it, but these are professional game designers. And then what right do you have to just yell at the forums, this is wrong, without all the information, without all the thought, just because you like one element of it?
Yeah. Yeah. You said it best, professional game designer. A person playing doesn't know what is needed or what, you know, is going to make the game better. And that's why Parnassius is so right that if they were to be more like Steve Jobs and just, you know, say this is what the updates are going to be, we're going to stick with them, here's how they're going to work, and here's why you're going to like them, and maybe hire, you know, some marketing word gurus to make it sound great, then I think you would have a great update to come out of the mining and smithing rework. Just like the evolution of combat was great, but it got distorted. So definitely Jagex needs to stick to their guns and focus on telling people why updates are great, why this needs to happen, and why you're going to like this. So, I mean, the players are going to accept it eventually.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to look at some real-life examples. Make mining and smithing great again.
There we go. That's what we got to do.
Let's build a new forgery and make the PVMs pay for it.
Oh yeah, there you go. I like where you're going.
Maybe they should just hire me.
Yeah. You could.
I'll send them my resume after we finish recording this update.
All right, sounds good. One final note on this question, specifically pertaining to scaling back on transparency. Every Friday, there's a behind-the-scenes video detailing the updates that are coming out. And every month, there's a behind-the-scenes video detailing the updates of that month. And then sometimes we get further looks ahead, like with the mining and smithing update on live stream, or in the case of this design document for PvP. Now, I think that the weekly behind-the-scenes videos are great. I think that the monthly behind-the-scenes text postings, emphasis on text postings, are great. I do not think that playing content on stream is great, especially when it's not released yet and it's subject to being changed, or it's not in a finished state. Because what that does is it allows the players to latch on to an idea that it can be changed, and if enough people make noise, we know that will likely happen. But on the flip side of this, they can't get rid of the weekly behind-the-scenes videos, they can't get rid of the monthly behind-the-scenes videos, even though they ought to, and they can't stop showing content on stream, even though they ought to, because it is what drives content, or rather drives viewers to the YouTube channels and the Twitch channel for RS. We know that those are the most popular videos, the ones that show content. So it is what keeps their numbers high, and they want to have a high level of community engagement. So even if they should pull back on some of those aspects, they really can't, because it's an excellent chance to talk about themselves and get their names out there on the internet.
I think you hit like the nail on the head there, because it's the fact is Jagex is showing so much, but not all of it, because you can't experience the actual content. So people start grasping on misunderstandings, and that's what gonna fuel all the riots and the complaints. While if you give if people experience the content, maybe they are still gonna like complain about it, but at least it's like grounded complaints then. If you're not gonna give them any information at all, or if like years ago you would get just a very vague BTS for that month, and there's just not enough to grasp and take out and go on the forums and yell about. So it's a very delicate balance, and I think Jagex right now gives so much that it gives the pretense of, hey, I now know how this update is going to work, so I now have the right to complain about it, even though it's not out yet.
Yeah.
So
and see, that's why I said weekly behind the scenes videos are great, because the video hits on Friday and the update is most often always on Monday. So that's 72 hours or less until the update hits.
Yeah, and they go so far into detail that, I mean, that it's hard to miss.
There's a difference between 72 hours, 2 weeks, and 2 months.
Yes.
And that's where the problems seem to come, is in the 2 weeks and the 2 months category. So that might be messaging. And we need to remember, and I think that this is something that most traditional marketing groups don't look at, because traditional marketing, unless it's specifically trying to sell something, is focused on generating profit. And what kind of profit are you generating from your behind-the-scenes videos? Probably not that much. So as a result, the marketing folks at Jagex likely aren't in on the behind-the-scenes video as much as they should be, because in the modern world, when you're dealing with social media marketing that, you know, turns around in less than a day for the cycle of what people complain about or like, you need to be on that, and you need to have your messaging down pat. So I think they ought to put some marketing people on the behind the scenes and content streaming stuff. That's my suggestion.
I wholeheartedly agree with you on that.
Yeah. Like it's like the US election going on. You have somebody who says something and the media jumps on that. And if your campaign is not fast enough to issue a counter statement, that's going to be the story that is run with. And now coming back to RS, same thing. You say something on your behind the scenes video, the community is going to run with whatever they feel the correct response to that is. And if you don't deal with that quick enough, or you don't have the messaging in place in the video to deal with that, you're going to have a problem. And that's what we had with mining and smithing.
Yep. I think you hit. Yeah. I think you completely understood the situation, and let's hope that we can actually see some improvements on that.
All righty. Thank you, Parnassius, for that question. You want to read this text question from Wiley?
Oh, yeah, sure. So apparently, Wally talks now. Do you think prayer as a skill is too focused in its alignment? You can only pray to Sarodomin, Zaros, and Saren, and the symbol for the skill is Sarodomin's crest. Do you think they should add small prayers or place quest requirements on some prayers that associate with the other gods? Make strength boosting prayers associate with Banders and the insta-kill prayer Brassica. Is it sad my phone auto-capitalizes Brassica? Thanks for the show.
Well, my phone auto-capitalizes Majorat if I start typing MA. One of the suggestions is Majorat.
I don't remember any RuneScape-specific things on my phone, so maybe I can still be saved.
Maybe. I don't think prayer as a skill, at least the standard skill book, has any alignment aside from the icon.
I mean, that is true, but the whole skill does have a bit of a Sarodomin vibe to it.
Didn't we have Dark Zamorak prayers in RS Classic at one point? Or is that Dark Magic?
Oh, I do not remember that anymore, to be honest. But, yeah, right now it's... I mean, I do agree. The basic prayer book, I don't think it's very Sarodomin themed. I just think that the entire skill has a very Sarodomin vibe to it. Like, almost all the altars you will see around the world have, like, a Sarodomin star on it. And the skill is a Sarodomin star. And I think this comes from the time that the gods were still the triage of Sarodomin, yes. Zamorak, and Gothics. So I would definitely not mind if they did a slight alteration of the skill. Like, instead of all the altars currently around the world, I would be really interested if they were replaced by, like, small little shrines to the different gods.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. And then they could give you, like, maybe passive effects, like the kind of like the pools in Ooglog do, but different.
Yeah, I mean, they can be really, really tiny, right? Bandos can give you, like, 5% strength bonus? Maybe not even that. I mean, the effects should not be substantial. But, like, these little touches could add so much richness to the world.
Right now, a person ought to just teleport back to their POH and use the altar there. There's no difference about what altar you use.
Indeed.
Well, except for a few cases.
And, I mean, altars are not that big of an issue to find in the world. So I think looking for an altar is not a challenge in the game. So I don't think the game would be hurt if more altars would be added to the game. I think, like, in terms of in-world, like, cultural richness, to make it more, more believable, like, little small shrines around the city would be very interesting. Like, right now, a city usually has a church, which is dedicated to Sarodomin with an altar, and that's where you go to recharge your prayer. But we know that in the world, there are people who follow Gothics and Armadil and Zamorak and Zeros and Saren and so forth. So it doesn't make sense the way it's set up if you look from it in an in-world standpoint. So I definitely think there could be some changes there that would make the world feel more realistic and more alive.
Yeah, and I mean, when you think about it, prayer hasn't been touched standard spell book since RS2. There's been a few additions like Chivalry and Piety and the Turmoil and whatnot, but not Turmoil, sorry, that's ancient, but
yeah.
You know, it basically says that I think everyone who has done Temple at Sentistan uses the ancient prayer book. That would be my guess.
I think most of the people would, So, it could use a touch-up. I don't think it's very necessary, though. It doesn't feel necessarily like that content.
No, it's most certainly not.
But, like, these little touches, they would just add so much to the world.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the god statues alone. I mean,
Yeah. And now this brings up another question. We have the Saren prayers and whatnot in the in the Zaro spellbook, the ancient spellbook. Do you think that there needs to be prayer books for the different gods, perhaps?
No.
No.
Zaros and Saren are very unique, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
In terms of God. Like, okay. They are part of the ancient spellbook, and the word ancient says it all. Like, Zaros and Saren are directly from Ma, like, direct, I don't know, creations of Ma, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, together they already form a bit of, like, the counterbalance. Like, I think they were the first after Gothics, probably, on Gilenor. I'm probably going to get very, very many
emails
of lore masters. Right?
If we had this update about prayer tweaks to talk about this week instead of talking about changes that needed to be made to the Ark.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely I think this is a great idea. And, you know, it's too bad that the 2017 survey is closed. I'd say Wiley, go post this and we'll promote it out there. So, but I don't know if we'll have a chance to do that in the future. But definitely a great idea, I think. So.
But these small I mean, this is not a piece of content that will take forever to develop.
No, of course not.
It would just add, like, the extra, oh, I'm going to say the word again, richness to the game. I mean, nobody's going to care that much, but every time you do it, you notice it. And
it's special, and it makes the game what it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think.
I mean, can you imagine like a Brassica shrine? Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I think lots of us in Clan Quest would as well. So,
yeah. You could put one in the middle of the Falador cabbage field or something.
Oh, well, there you go. Or in the cabbage face punch game area.
Oh, that would be good. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Brassica love going forward. Thank you, Wiley. If you want to send us in a question, you can do that. You can find the forum topic if you remember the RSBNB forums at rsbnb.com/forums every Monday. But if you can't wait until Monday or you want to use an alternative means of contacting us, you can leave us a voicemail or text message at 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. Or you can email questions at rsbnb.com. Or finally, if you use the Twitters, leave us a message, DM on Twitter at RSBNB. All right. Good couple of questions this week, everyone. Thank you. Moving on to tech news. Apple's TV plans have mutated once again. Last year, well, I should say initially they wanted to sell an actual TV set. And then last year they wanted to sell you content on the TV. But that plan has changed once again, and apparently now they just want to tell you what's on TV and help you to watch it. So it's reported that Apple has started talking to TV programmers and other video companies about creating a digital TV guide that would work both on Apple TV boxes and other devices like iPhones. And the idea is that they would let the user see what kind of programming is available in video apps made by the likes of HBO, Netflix, and ESPN without having to open up each app individually and to play shows and movies with a single click. So rather than actually focusing on content, they are going to be looking at aggregating the content and providing you ways to access it. So,
I mean, it is true that the market on like watching movies and series is very segregated. Like the game market is very different, for example. You go to Steam or Humble or
GOG.
GOG and Origin. And then you had the four big ones, probably. And there's a lot of overlap between the two. But there's definitely like almost a monopoly for Steam. But if you look at like video content, like TV series and movies, you have Netflix, you have HBO Now, you have, I mean, in the UK, you have Sky. CBS is going to have its own streaming service. There's probably plenty more examples that I don't know of, but like, there's many more alternatives. So aggregating that would not be a bad idea, I think. But on the other hand, it sort of also means you still need these subscriptions, don't you?
Yeah. And I mean, I think what Apple could potentially do is that, you know, once this thing would potentially get off the ground, they could have some kind of deal where, you know, it'd be similar to purchasing a Netflix subscription with your iTunes account. A portion of it would go to Apple and the rest would go to the subscribers. And of course, it would have to be a sane price for the subscribers to latch on. But you could potentially do a bulk plan that would give you access to certain types of streaming providers. So that might be something that
might be very interesting.
Opt into.
Yeah.
And is this the future of TV? Is broadcast going to go away from this?
I mean, it is shrinking, I think. The business model of watching TV and then be interrupted by commercials all the time, I think it's inferior over just paying a monthly fee and watching things whenever you want, without interruption, where you can pause it at any time. I mean, why would you not want that?
Yeah. And another great thing this potentially allows people to do is that, you know, if you're, say, an up-and-coming content producer and you produce a set amount of shows, you could potentially sign up for this and your show would appear on a TV guide just as if you were actually on the TV. Mm-hmm. So, like, if we had, a tech and gaming network, for example, you could have all these shows and then they would just appear on that thing and you could opt into that, which I think would be a really great way to have exposure. It would kind of be similar to the way the iTunes store works for podcasting. So,
yeah, it would be great if you can blur the line between actual TV and the streaming services.
Yeah.
And make that whole. And I mean, for me, one of the big advantages of TV is that you can zap through the channels if you don't know what you want to watch.
Yep.
And then be like, oh, this looks so interesting.
And then you can't have the Apple TV interface on that, which is really unfortunate. And that is one thing that the Xbox One does extraordinarily well, is that it's got that HDMI input port, so you can plug your cable box or wherever you get your TV signal from into the Xbox, and then the Xbox, in effect, becomes your TV guide. And it has all the channels, and you can swap channels with the Xbox One. Then if you're not seeing anything there, you can switch to another pane called App Channels, which will have all the apps you have installed, Netflix, CBS, and whatnot, and you name it. So, you know, I hate to say it, but Apple is playing catch up here because this already exists on Microsoft's platform.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be great if we can, like, have the equivalent of, say, zapping, but so that it works on Netflix and all the other streaming services, because navigating around Netflix is never really a good experience for me. I earlier watched a movie and was like, I want to watch a movie about this length, and I tried finding something on Netflix, and what I ended up doing was getting my list I have somewhere on my phone with the backlog of movies I still want to watch and just looking them up one by one on Netflix to see if they were on there instead of just exploring content. So yeah. I think in terms of exploration, there's still a lot to be done, but as you say, there's probably so many things already out there. I'm not entirely sure if Apple can really wedge itself into the TV market.
And I mean, coming into the story, I had no idea that I was going to bring Microsoft up. And then it just clicks. Oh, there's a solution for this. It's already from Microsoft.
Yeah.
So, only reason we still use an Apple TV is because it's the easiest and largest platform that rents movies. So, because Netflix in Canada doesn't have new stuff, believe it or not. It's all old. But anyways, moving on to our next piece of tech news. I imagine you were once a Firefox user.
I was once a Firefox user, yeah.
Firefox 48 shipped this week, and it brings something called Rust and multi-process capability for some users. So Rust is their redesigned extension toolkit, which is part of the reason multiprocess has taken this long to arrive. But basically what multiprocess means is that for each tab in your browser, that tab is going to be rendered and contained in its own process on your computer, which means it's isolated from everything else. It has its own memory pool. It has its own resources, and It's a lot more elegant, and it also provides some security benefits. Mozilla has been working on this since 2009, believe it or not, and it's just starting to ship out now in Firefox 48. So,
yeah. All right. That is really interesting. I don't really have a desire to switch to another browser.
Same. It's going to become mainstream Q1 of 2017 with Firefox 50. They're rolling it out over time because as it is right now, some of the extensions, the huge extension ecosystem that Mozilla has, might not necessarily work with this new architecture. So that's why they're rolling it out to a select few people in 48, more in 49, and the goal is to have this out to everyone for Firefox 50. So,
clever strategy.
Yeah, and I mean, they started in 09, it was suspended in 2011, and they resumed in 2013, and the main reason being, of course, is the extension architecture made it hard to do this, achieving the separation compared to Chrome and, Edge's extensions. So, yeah.
But, I mean, extensions are such an important part of your daily computer use right now. Look at Chrome OS. That is just a browser as operating system. That's how powerful extensions can be.
Yeah. So, yeah, you have lots of experience with that. How many extensions do you run?
Right now, quite a lot, actually.
I got three.
Oh, wow. You're doing that really well. Let me quickly go into my... I can check this somewhere. It's not very discoverable. Oh, there we go. Extensions. So I have one... No, that's not right. Oh, yeah. So I use a preview version of the new Material extensions page, but it's broken, so it's only showing two. But it's a lot more than that.
So... The reason I swapped from Firefox initially was because it was slow. And Chrome was just so much faster at the time. And it supported, the multi-process architecture out of the box when it came out. It was very minimal. And it just felt great. So,
and it's a WebKit-based browser.
That's right. Though it has forked since then into its own, I think, the Blink rendering engine, if I recall. But nonetheless, Firefox users should get some love with this patch. And I think that'll be enough to keep Firefox users happy. I know Firefox users are pretty dedicated. But I think as long as you're running a modern browser, you're good. It's just a matter of personal choice at this point.
Yeah.
Edge, Chrome, Safari, Firefox, they all do the same thing. As long as you're not running something ancient like Internet Explorer 10 or before, you're probably good.
The internet should be shut down if you still use Internet Explorer 10.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Does it even support IPv6?
Nope.
There you go.
Soon. We made RSBNB's website work in Internet Explorer 6 when we designed it. Yes. Or no,
you're
I'm sorry.
Alive?
I'm sorry, number 7. I'm sorry, it was 7. We had a nice deprecation warning for IE6, and it looked absolutely horrible. So.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Wow.
But anyways, so that's what's new with the Firefox. So if you're a Firefox user, rejoice, you're joining the rest of the world. If not, continue using Chrome, Safari, or Edge. And the final piece of tech news for this week is that HoloLens Developer Editions are now shipping. These are the pieces of kit that Microsoft provided to developers for $29.99. That's $2,999. And they're now shipping. So if you want to make holographic applications or experience a holographic Windows 10, you can sign up to... become part of this development program, but it is a pretty significant investment for the hardware. So, yeah.
The HoloLens is one of the... It's probably... I mean, it's more augmented reality than virtual reality, I guess. But it's one of those things I'm really excited by, even more than the Morpheus or Oculus Rift. Or the 5? HTC 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
the HoloLens is really exciting, especially because it's like this extra layer on top. You can do so much cool stuff with it. So sometimes I watch like cool science fiction movies. I'm like, oh, all those holograms they like interact with, and that's never going to happen in real life. And I'm like, but wait a second, just put on a HoloLens and put the stuff there. It's going to work. It's there already. So I'm really curious to see what the developers are going to do with this, and if we are going to see like these kind of things become more and more mainstream over the next decades or two decades or so.
Yeah. You know, I think Microsoft has the investment capital and the vision to take something like this and bring it down to the, you know, the mainstream pricing of $500 probably, like the Oculus and whatnot. So, I mean, this is, of course, early days for Microsoft. And Microsoft has their own ideas in mind for what they want with this, aside from, you know, gaming and whatnot. Reality architecture, you name it, you can practically do it.
Think about the exciting opportunities Microsoft has with, on one hand, their operating system, and the other hand, the HoloLens.
Yep. Oops, sorry about that. Website just started playing sound, but it really illustrates, I think, Microsoft's vision and why Windows 10 is so important.
I mean, I'm really excited about if Microsoft can completely combine their Xbox architecture, their operating system architecture, and the HoloLens into one package that really works well together. Oh boy, they're gonna become a big name in the technical market. They're gonna be ahead of everything.
Yeah. And I mean, just looking at these videos, it's hard to believe that this is actually a real product that is now shipping. So, it's, you know, straight out of Star Trek: Deep Space Nine when we first saw these kind of holograms on displays like this. So, and you know, this would be the prime example of a platform that Pokemon Go could use.
I'm not sure if people will walk with these things in public. I mean, we've seen the Google Glass not become a big
Right.
So, like a big lens, like, it's going to be home use, definitely. But I mean, the technology might evolve into something more portable.
Indeed, but if anyone out there has money to burn, well, there you go. All right.
I'd love to come over and give it a try, but it's a kind of steep entry price right now. So
that's right. All right. So moving on to other things, we have the wrapping up of the July skill of the month. In July, the divination skill of the month was taken by Flash with 20.3 million experience gain. In second place, we saw Parnassius with 7.2, and in third place was Tim with just over 7 million gain. Then, of course, we have the August mining skill of the month. Tim is once again taking part here. He's in the lead with 3.9 million. Flash is in second place with 2.7, and Mandy Girl is in third with 1.3 million XP gained. So there you have
anything
it. There's your top three. Yeah, there's your top three, and anything can happen because primary skill of the month, only a few days in, so anyone's game at this point. Interesting part of this one, Sorensen 57 has 143 million XP gained at this skill, so it should be interesting to see how much the top miner does in this competition. I don't know how you could get 143 million mining XP. I just don't. Anyways,
I think I do know.
Oh, Seven Stones.
Seven Stones.
Yeah. All right. Well, also this month we have the Informer roundup, discussing the articles that we had for Informer in July, ranging from Examine Info with Colton, Mr. Bistro's discussion of the Chinese acquisition, and Alex's initial impressions of the ARC for RS articles. And then finally, Tan has covered the release of Doom, the new Doom game, Doom 2016, going back all the way to 1993, that first gory shooter. And of course, I gave everyone a nice poke to come over and visit the podcast you're listening to right now, because, well, Sirion, you're co-host this quarter. So that's what's in the Informer Roundup, and you can find all that and more at informer.rsbnb.com. All right. Pick of the week time. I believe it's my pick of the week this week, unless you have found anything during this podcast that has jumped out at you.
Oh, no, I was too busy, like, complaining about the community and the arc and such.
All right, that's fair. My pick of the week this week is an application for iOS and Mac. It is called OneBlocker. Now, a lesser-known feature of iOS 9 is that Apple brought out something called content blockers. So basically, you can have an application and it can register itself as a content blocker. And then what you can do with that is you can use that to speed up your mobile Safari browsing experience and also save bandwidth. So this is OneBlocker. It allows you to block ads, which, of course, we would hope that you would whitelist rsbnb.com and all our domains. It allows you to also to block trackers, Twitter widgets, Facebook widgets, share widgets, custom web fonts, foreign Discus compants, EU cookie notices, and adult websites if you don't want any of those creeping around as well. It's also got whitelisting capabilities and the ability to block any element on any page, which you can configure by using the Safari extension and Web Inspector when you hook your phone up. So you can do that. You can also block scripting from websites, certain web fonts that you might not be showing up. It basically allows you to say that, oh, this page is loading a certain script, and if you don't want it, well, you can make that script not load.
Or get rid of Comic Sans forever.
There you go. You could also use it to do that. So this is called OneBlocker. It's available for free on iOS. There are some in-app purchases in order to enable parts of the list, but it's, you know, a price worth paying, especially if you, you know, just want to have the whole shebang and block everything. Because, you know, I use content blockers, and the way I look at them is they're HTTP firewalls for the web, so that, you know, you're only downloading what you want from the web pages you're visiting, and it makes web pages load a whole lot faster. Not to poke fun on anyone in particular, but if you visit the tech website, theverge.com, and you visit them with your content blocker enabled, you will see how much faster that website loads. So it's definitely something that you should look at if you are looking to make the move to kind of clean up your web experience. So that's OneBlocker. You can find it on iOS and Mac. And a great thing is that if you are a Mac user and you get the Mac version and the iOS version, your settings sync nicely with iCloud. So, yeah. It's the solution you want to use if you use Safari on Mac and on iOS. So that's OneBlocker. There are other options too, but I feel that this is the best compromise between being easy to use, but yet still having a little bit of control if you want to do your own custom blocking. OneBlocker.com. All right, and just a fun fact, it comes pre-installed with 28,000 blockers.
That's a lot.
Yep. So it makes things a whole lot faster. And plus, it also lets you, you know, disable Facebook tracking and Twitter tracking and all that other stuff. So that's great. All right. So what have you been up to this past week?
Jobbing. Okay. As usual. Once you get a full-time job, it takes up remarkably a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
I've finally been trying out the Arc. I have also grown bored of the Arc in the same week.
Not surprising.
Just being around, really. It was a very uneventful week for me.
All right. As for me this week on RS, did a bit of herb lore, some farming runs, and that's pretty much it this week. Didn't have too much to do in terms of patching and all that stuff. Still waiting to get the Super War Master potion recipe from the Dungeoneering and the Garageo cards. I need that one. And, you know, I'd like your opinion on this, and maybe some of the listeners' opinions too. What do you think's better? to do more experience per inventory. Like, for example, the Ceridoan Bruiser, 180 XP per potion, and you can do 14 of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that effectively is about 2,500 XP per inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Or what you could do is you could do 4 Super War Master potions for 2,000 XP per inventory, but you're only making 4 potions. And the logic is that with inventory loadouts and hotkeys, you can get more Herb Lord done faster and get XP faster by doing fewer potions per inventory.
I think it is definitely faster, but it's also more intense in the clicking. So it's a bit of a trade-off. Like, if you want to do fully focused Herb Lord, then probably the small number of potions per inventory is fine. But sometimes you just want to be like semi-distracted doing Herb Lord. Like, maybe I'm watching a YouTube video on the second screen, and then it can be a bit better to do. It's not AFK-able, but it gets closer.
Yeah, it's
to
not.
That point.
And, I mean, all you so need is your numbers, because you can use the bank presets to do that fairly well.
Yeah, I mean, you can automate a lot, but like, it's still a bit less clicking. I think it's a trade-off. It depends what you feel like. I mean, it also depends on how much GP you spend, of course.
Yeah, I may make to minimize that. So that's why it's also taking so long. But I don't know. Listeners, if you have any opinions, please do let me know. Either in form of questions or chatting with me in the friends chat at Bits, Bytes, and Game. Also this week, I put out an Informer article for RSBNB Informer entitled 1 Year of Windows 10, in which I talk about the first year that Windows 10 has been around, including 350 million devices installed and 135 billion hours of use, all the way to some of the detractions that people had for installing Windows 10. And I talk about why those shouldn't be reasons to not install Windows 10. And then I also mentioned parts of the anniversary update, which are great. And I made my version of Windows 10 almost look like Windows 7, which you can actually do now quite easily with color and all that too. So that was probably my favorite part of it, is that I ended up with a version of Windows 10 that can kind of look like Windows 7 if you just discount that the start menu panes are swapped. So, yeah. And when you look at it, like, if you look at Windows Explorer, you'll see Windows Explorer hasn't really changed all that much since Windows 7. So
it's mostly the textures, probably, and like,
yeah, the way it looks. And I mean, yeah. I honestly was never that big of a fan of all that translucent glass stuff with Windows 7 and Vista.
Mm.
So I quite like what they've done with 10 and 8.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but you can find that in at informer.rsbnb.com. So I think that's it for this episode, unless there's anything else in particular.
No, not really, actually.
Yeah, we did kind of go long on the ranting side of things, but I think we were fairly coherent, which is what counts.
Well, I mean, in my defense, I did warn you in advance of the recording.
Yeah, and I mean, that's perfectly fine. These are opinions that we need to get out, and I think that's what the listeners listen to this podcast for. That's our humble opinion. So, with that being said, we'll be back next week to discuss the wilderness and all kinds of PvP-ish things that are coming with it. But I believe that's all for today.
I agree. See you out next week.
See ya.